The headlines this hour. Russia says three people were killed following a massive blast that destroyed parts of the only bridge that connects Crimea to mainland Russia. Railway workers across Britain stage another strike over a dispute over pay and work conditions amid an escalating cost of living crisis. And Syria calls on the U.S. to immediately end its illegitimate presence on its soil. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The blaze sparked by a car bomb blast has hit a key bridge linking the Crimean Peninsula to mainland Russia. Moscow says it is investigating the incident.
The main investigation department of the Russian Investigative Committee has opened a criminal case about the incident at the Crimean Bridge. According to preliminary information, a truck was blown up on the automobile part of the Crimean Bridge from the Taman Peninsula. This led to the ignition of seven fuel tanks of a train traveling toward Crimea, and as a result, two car roads of the bridge partially collapsed.
Russian investigators say that at least three people have been killed as a result. They also say the owner of the truck has been identified. There's been no immediate claim of responsibility, but the chairman of the Crimean Republic's State Council has blamed what he called Ukrainian vandals. Meanwhile, Ukrainian presidential advisor has said the explosion is the beginning, and that everything illegal must be destroyed. Russia has reacted to that, saying the comment shows what it called the terrorist nature of Ukraine. The bridge was opened in 2018, 4 years after Crimea joined Russia. It now serves as a key transparent link for carrying military equipment to Russian soldiers fighting in Ukraine. Our correspondent Johnny Miller in Donetsk says that Russia is likely to avenge the Crimean Bridge blast by hitting more targets in Ukraine.
Russian officials are pointing the blame at Ukraine. One member of the Russian parliament says that this is not only a challenge by Ukraine, it is a declaration of war, I quote, a war without rules. So what does that mean? We can expect a massive response now from Russia. For months now, we've been expecting Russia to escalate, start attacking other targets within Ukraine. From the beginning of this conflict, they focused on military targets, headquarters, barracks, weapon supplies, and many Western analysts have been confused as to why Russia hasn't launched strikes against civil infrastructure. Of course, when the Americans invaded Iraq, of course, they started hitting Baghdad from the very start. Many are confused why Russia hasn't done this yet. We've been expecting a kind of red line, if you want, to be crossed by Ukraine over recent months, perhaps when Ukraine attacked Belgrade or Rostov in the Russian Federation, or when they started attacking Crimea. But this attack on Crimean Bridge, it looks like it will be a major point in this war, as we expect Russia to strike back with a huge amount of force. They may well hit power stations, bridges, civil infrastructure. We've been expecting that for weeks now, especially as Russia has mobilized over 300,000 men who are slowly coming into the Donbass region. So this attack on this bridge, all the fingers are being pointed at Ukraine. This attack on this bridge looks to be a major moment in this conflict.
Moscow says the West is seeking to portray it as a source of nuclear threat. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says the West distorts everything in an attempt to show that it is Russia that voices nuclear threats. The top diplomat added that Western countries resort to manipulations to do so. Lavrov noted that in the context of the crisis in Ukraine, it is the United States and its allies that are actively trying to put the nuclear rhetoric on the global agenda. This is Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has called on NATO to carry out preemptive strikes against Russia. The Kremlin says Zelensky is dragging the West into a confrontation with Moscow and the entire world to the brink of catastrophe.
It started in February 2022, and there seems to be no end in sight. While the Ukrainian military has made some advances, Russia still controls some 20% of the country, and there's nothing that suggests that this war is winding down. The Ukrainian military is backed up by Western weapons and Western intelligence gathering, which tells them where Russian soldiers are and where their bases are located. In the latest in its long list of support for Ukraine, the U.S. Congress has passed another aid for Kyiv, which amounts to some $12 billion. And this is on top of nearly $50 billion sent there in the past year. But apart from all the weapons, cash, and intelligence sent and given to Ukraine, reports are emerging that the U.S. has sent men on the ground there. A recent report released by an American news organization, The Intercept, stated that the U.S. Special Operations Forces are on the ground in Ukraine as part of a broad covert operation that includes CIA personnel. According to the report, before the Russian special military operation, the CIA believed Ukraine would fall quickly and so withdrew most of its forces and assets. But later on, as the war lengthened, the CIA began to believe that that wouldn't happen, and Washington sent its covert assets back into Ukraine. But all this back and forth between Russia and Ukraine and the West's unilateral support for Kyiv has given rise to a new crisis, one which doesn't only involve the two warring sides anymore, and that is nuclear warfare.
The threat of a possible nuclear war breakout is something the U.S. attributes to Russia. Moscow has pushed back by saying that Kyiv should not be provided with more weapons. Meanwhile, Zelensky signed a directive just days ago which prevents a peace deal from happening. This is while Russia announced it was ready to discuss a peace agreement after the four regions of Ukraine rejoined Russia in a referendum.
On Thursday, at a fundraiser in New York, U.S. President Joe Biden made an extraordinary and, as some say, highly alarming comments about the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war and the threat of a nuclear war. Biden said the risk of nuclear Armageddon is at its highest point since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. But the question which comes to mind is whether this admission is a result of the Biden administration's policy of supporting Ukraine in a war on Russia's border or Moscow's actions so far. Russian President Vladimir Putin has spoken out about using nuclear weapons, but never directly stated that he will use them. During his speech, however, Biden stated that Putin is not joking when he talks about the use of tactical nuclear weapons. The last time the U.S. was faced with such a situation was the Cuban Missile Crisis, which then President John F. Kennedy resolved through negotiations and striking a deal with Cuba. Biden, however, has so far shown no signs of walking back on its policies regarding Ukraine, and this has been clear in the U.S. not showing any interest in diplomacy and virtually cutting off all high-level talks. Not only this, Biden has time and again reiterated his support for Kyiv, and the billions of dollars of aid is only a demonstration of the fact. Following the West's unconditional and unilateral support, Kyiv has also pushed matters a step further and is now calling for strikes on Russia. Also, the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, called for NATO to launch what he called a preventive strike on Russia to prevent Moscow from using nuclear weapons. But this has raised questions about Kyiv's ambitions and the chances that the move would spark World War III and possibly a nuclear war. The Kremlin also responded to the comment and said Zelensky was trying to spark a world war. The remark gave birth to internal disputes in Kyiv, with Ukrainian officials downplaying what Zelensky said. Now, as the world is faced with several economic, social, and environmental challenges, the warmongering aspirations of the U.S. and its allies seem to have pushed humanity to the point of no return. But many, including Washington and Kyiv, seem to be more focused on pushing their own agenda forwards, regardless of what's at stake.
British commuters facing severe travel disruption again as tens of thousands of railway workers stage another walkout over pay and job conditions. Authorities have advised passengers to only travel by train on Saturday if absolutely necessary. More than 40,000 members of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union have participated in the 24-hour strike. Only 20% of the trains are running across Britain. The nationwide strike is the latest in a wave of industrial actions in recent months. The strikers demand wage increases to keep pace with decades-high inflation amid a cost-of-living crisis. Over the past months, tens of thousands of staff in various industries, from the postal and legal systems to ports and telecommunications, have also gone on a strike. Workers are facing a huge hike in energy prices, interest rates, and food costs. People have rallied across several European cities to protest against soaring energy and food prices. In the Czech Republic, thousands of people gathered in the capital, Prague, to protest against what demonstrators called the government's inaction in addressing the soaring inflation. They demanded higher wages to be able to afford the rising prices. In the German capital, Berlin, a similar protest was organized by far-right groups. Demonstrators held banners and chanted anti-government slogans. They rejected the government's policies in dealing with prices. Energy prices have soared in Europe recently, especially after Russia cut off its gas supplies to some European countries. Haiti has formally asked for international assistance to tackle a security crisis that the country's police have failed to deal with. Haiti's ambassador to the U.S., Buchit Edmund, made the announcement on the sidelines of the General Assembly meeting of the Organization of American States. He said the call is made as the poorest country in the Americas is grappling with a human tragedy. According to the envoy, one of the most notorious armed gangs has been in control of fuel ports for more than 20 days, causing crippling shortages. Edmund says the form of assistance will be decided by the international community and partners. However, he dismissed the deployment of a foreign force to the country. Haiti has been hit by protests and looting since last month, when the government announced a fuel price hike. The Syrian Foreign Ministry says the U.S. is committing an act of piracy by plundering Syrian oil and smuggling it into northern Iraq, which is run by U.S.-backed militant groups. The ministry says that such a practice goes against international law and U.N. conventions. It urged the U.N. Security Council to intervene and to condemn Washington's looting of the Arab country's oil. The ministry also demanded that the U.S. withdraw its, quote, illegitimate forces from Syrian territories and to stop supporting terrorists and separatist militia. The U.S. military has stationed forces and equipment in northeastern Syria. It claims the deployment is aimed at preventing the oil fields from falling into the hands of Daesh terrorists. Damascus deems the deployment as illegal and aimed at plundering the country's natural resources. Palestinians hold massive funerals in the occupied West Bank for three Palestinians who were recently killed by Israeli forces. In the city of Jenin, thousands took part in funeral processions of two Palestinians killed on Saturday. The victims, both 17 years old, were shot dead during an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp, the focal point of a crackdown on Palestinians. Also in Ramallah, people mourned another 17-year-old who was killed on Friday. Israel has intensified deadly crackdown against Palestinians in the occupied territories over the past months. More than 100 Palestinians have been killed so far this year, making it the deadliest year since 2015. Tens of thousands of Yemenis are on the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities across the country to commemorate the birth anniversary of the Prophet Muhammad. The ralliers urged Muslims across the world to stand against Western imperialism. They held banners against the U.S. and Israel. Washington has been a major supporter of the Saudi-led coalition that launched a devastating war in Yemen in 2015. The rallies come just a week after UN brokered truce between Yemen's Ansarullah movements and the coalition came to an end. The truce first came into effect on the 2nd of April for an initial 2 months and was extended twice until October the 2nd. Pakistan's government has announced plans to impeach the country's president for trying to block the no-confidence motion against former Prime Minister Imran Khan. Nasser Kazmi has more in this report from Islamabad.
The Pakistani government is all set to launch an impeachment proceeding against President Arif Alvi and demanded the authorities concerned to start the constitutional process to remove him from power. The possibility of impeachment was raised by Pakistan's Foreign Minister Bilawal Bhutto Zardari and then elaborated by Pakistani lawmakers just hours after the president addressed a joint session of the parliament on Thursday to mark the beginning of the last parliamentary year of the current National Assembly. The MPs from ruling coalition say that President Alvi, backed by the ousted Prime Minister Imran Khan, has violated the country's constitution since his party's government was removed from office through a vote of no confidence. Pakistan's Tehreek-e-Insaf party chairman Imran Khan, who was deposed through a legislative no-confidence vote in April, has been staging massive rallies of his party supporters nationwide to press for early elections, alleging that his government was overthrown through a conspiracy hatched by the United States.
President Alvi has disgraced the parliament on several occasions by supporting his party leader Imran Khan. He must know that he is the president of Pakistan and not the PTI. If he wants to indulge in politics, he must leave the office of the president.
We are all set to launch a parliamentary movement against President Alvi, as before we launched against his ally Imran Khan. We will remove him as president very soon.
Under the Constitution of Pakistan, the president could be impeached only by a two-thirds majority of the joint session of the National Assembly and Senate. However, political experts believe that the government doesn't yet have the numbers.
President Arif Alvi is critical of this government, and he has been criticizing from time to time the current government. So they're not happy with him. They want him to be out of this office, but they don't have the required majority.
In his address to a joint sitting of the parliament, President Alvi reiterated that free and fair elections remain in demand, suggesting the need of dialogue between the political stakeholders and urging them to end polarization. No president has been impeached in Pakistan's political history so far. In 2008, former President Pervez Musharraf came close to such a challenge, but tendered his resignation before his political rivals launched proceedings against him. Nasser Kazmi in Islamabad.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The Biden administration has imposed sweeping technology restrictions on China. New rules include measures to exclude China from using semiconductor chips made anywhere in the world with U.S. tools. We look at the world media's coverage of this story. Reuters news agency has more on the story. The Biden administration on Friday, 7th of October, published a sweeping set of export controls, including a measure to cut China off from certain semiconductor chips made anywhere in the world with U.S. tools. vastly expanding its reach in its attempt to slow Beijing's technological and military advancement. The rules, some of which go into effect immediately, build on restrictions sent in letters earlier this year to top toolmakers, KLA Corp, Lam Research Corp, and Applied Materials Inc., in effect requiring them to halt shipments of equipment to wholly Chinese-owned factories producing advanced logic chips. The raft of measures could amount to the biggest shift in U.S. policy towards shipping technology to China since the 1990s. If effective, they could set China's chip manufacturing industry back years by forcing American and foreign companies that use U.S. technology to cut off support for some of China's leading factories and chip designers. In a briefing with reporters on Thursday, 6th of October, previewing the rules, senior U.S. government officials said many of the rules sought to prevent foreign firms from selling advanced chips to China or supplying Chinese firms with tools to make their own advanced chips. They conceded, however, that they had not yet secured any promises that allied nations will implement similar measures and that discussions with those nations were ongoing. We recognize that the unilateral controls we're putting into place will lose effectiveness over time if other countries don't join us, one U.S. official said. And we risk harming U.S. technology leadership if foreign competitors are not subject to similar controls. The expansion of U.S. powers to control exports to China of electronic chips made with U.S. tools is based on a broadening of the so-called Foreign Direct Product Rule. It was previously expanded to give the U.S. government authority to control exports of chips made overseas to Chinese telecommunications giant Huawei Technologies, and later to stop the flow of semiconductors to Russia. Early on Friday, the United States added China's top memory chip maker, YMTC, and 30 other Chinese firms to a list of companies that U.S. officials cannot inspect, ratcheting up tensions with Beijing and taking aim at a firm that has long troubled the Biden administration. The Washington Post has more on the same story. The Biden administration on Friday, 7th of October, announced its most aggressive measures to date aimed at limiting China's access to advanced computer chips and chip-making equipment, saying that the technology is supporting China's military modernization and even its development of weapons of mass destruction. The Biden administration said it was focusing solely on the semiconductor chips, activities and entities of greatest national security concern in China to minimize harm to the American chip industry, foundational to the U.S. economy, and disruptions to the global supply chain. The move represents a clear flexing of U.S. muscle in its competition with China, with analysts saying it amounts to a new strategy of high-tech containment of China. But officials also acknowledge the effort could backfire on the United States without buy-in from foreign partners and allies. We recognize that the unilateral controls we're putting into place tomorrow will lose effectiveness over time if other countries don't join us, and we risk harming U.S. technology leadership if foreign competitors are not subject to similar controls, said a senior Biden administration official who spoke on condition of anonymity. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan last month said the administration was seeking to shed the old approach of maintaining a relative advantage in key technologies to blowing open as large a lead as possible. The export controls imposed on Russia by the United States and 37 other countries earlier this year showed that such tools can do more than just prevent gains, Jake Sullivan said. Sullivan added, they can be a new strategic asset in the United States and allied toolkit to impose costs on adversaries and even over time degrade their battlefield capabilities. But that collective effort's success only underscores the need for similar support from allies with this action, said William Reinsch, a senior U.S. Commerce Department official in the Clinton administration, but now at the Center for Strategic and International Security. William Reinsch added, "This won't work unless the affected governments and companies are willing to cooperate. You're always walking a fine line between controlling too much and too little. If you control too much, then you're kneecapping your own guys, their ability to invest in new technologies." The new rules were released by the U.S. Commerce Department on Friday, 7th of October. The Semiconductor Industry Association, which represents nearly all of the U.S. semiconductor industry by revenue and almost two-thirds of non-U.S. chip firms, said in a statement it was assessing the new rules' impact and would work with members to ensure compliance. The British newspaper, the Financial Times, has also covered the same story. The United States has introduced sweeping export controls that will severely complicate efforts by Chinese companies to develop cutting-edge technologies with military applications in one of the toughest actions President Joe Biden has taken against China. The U.S. Commerce Department on Friday, 7th of October, announced restrictions that will make it extremely hard for Chinese companies to obtain or manufacture advanced computer chips and will slow their progress in artificial intelligence. The measures are also designed to make it much tougher for China to develop supercomputers with military applications. The controls mark a new attempt to decouple China from the United States in the cutting-edge technologies. They come days before Chinese President Xi Jinping is expected to seal a third term as leader of China at the 20th National Congress of China. Paul Triolo, a China and technology expert at Albright Stonebridge, a consultancy firm, said the action was a major watershed in U.S.-China relations and in the increasingly intense technology competition between Washington and Beijing. The U.S. has essentially declared war on China's ability to advance the country's use of high-performance computing for economic and security gains, said Paul Triolo. The controls will hit Chinese companies in multiple ways. They will bar U.S. companies from exporting critical chip manufacturing tools to China, which will affect groups such as Semiconductor Manufacturing International Corp, Yangtze Memory Technologies Corp, and Changxin Memory.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri wa salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now let's listen to the speech of Sheikh Jafar Jafar.
I begin in the name of Allah, the Most Kind, the Most Merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We then begin this sermon the way the Commander of the Faithful used to begin his, by advising us, Usikum ibadallah bitaqwallah, that we advise you, O the servants of God, to be God-conscious, God-fearing, and pious human beings. We had stated that inshallah we will be beginning a new series, and it's about how to combat the desires that we have, how to fight the nafs that we have to ensure that it remains in the path that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants it to be. What I want to talk about today in a little bit of detail is understanding the soul of a human being, right? And what we're about to describe, it sounds as though it is like fiction, you know, but it's not. It's a reality, but it's something that we're just not aware of or not paying attention to. Our soul or our existence, let's look at our existence. Our existence is composed of two environments. Yeah, the first environment is the worldly existence that we have, that we see. And this is the realm of the body. Yeah, this is where our physical self remains. And then there is a spiritual existence that's simultaneous to our physical existence. And this is the realm of the soul, where the soul lives. The soul inhabits both the physical realm and the spiritual realm. You're going to have to stay with me today, okay? Two realms of existence, physical realm, spiritual realm. The soul exists in both. That's why we have a soul inside of us. It exists in this physical realm and it exists in the spiritual realm. Its ascension takes place in the spiritual realm. So whatever we see, like we think that, oh, I'm not feeling a difference now. If I had the ability to see what's happening in the spiritual realm, I would see every action having an effect on my soul, right? In both of these existences, right, there are two guards or two hosts who are battling one another for supremacy. There is the divine hosts, and then there are the satanic hosts. Yeah, they exist within us. This is the promise of Iblis, wasn't it? That I will flow through the blood of Bani Adam, except for those who are utterly pure. But everybody else will struggle with this. And so in these realms, there is the satanic hosts and the divine hosts. And they are battling each other to see who will reign supreme, right? And so the divine forces are those forces that drive us towards good actions. They tell us to be honest. They tell us to be kind. They tell us to do what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants. While the satanic forces will tell us, follow your desires. Your heart wants something. Why are you saying no? You live once. And so this is something that constantly takes place and the battle is constantly brewing. And the battle primarily between these two forces takes place in the worldly realm, right? In this physical realm. And each of them utilize certain weapons, if we call it, right? I'm describing a battle here, yes? They utilize certain weapons at their disposal. And these weapons are what? Our seven functionalities of the body, right? Each of them are fighting for supremacy over our ears, over our eyes, over our tongue, over our stomach, over our private parts, over our arms, and over our legs. They utilize these seven things, each of them telling them something, and each of them telling them something else. This is why we are constantly in this battle. Should I look? Should I not look? Should I click? Should I not click? Should I listen to this? Should I not listen to this? Each of them wants to reign supreme. Each of them are utilizing the same functionalities that we have, that Allah has provided for us in this physical realm. And so they are fighting over this battle. On top of these seven functionalities, there is one that governs them, and that is our imagination or our mind. Yeah. They are also fighting for supremacy over this, the faculty of imagination. You know, we are created with certain faculties. If you go and study the books of Akhlaq, they tell us we are created with the faculty of anger, for example, the faculty of desire, the faculty of intellect. But there is one faculty that can be dominant over all, and that is the faculty of imagination, the faculty of thought. You know, when you sit there, sometimes we have thoughts that jump from tree to tree, as described by our ulama, that, oh, I could do this and I could do that. While I'm here, my thoughts are all the way somewhere else altogether. The faculty of imagination is the one that once it gains a certain direction, if one of these two hosts begins to win, that faculty of imagination will begin to imitate the teachings that that host begins to prescribe for them. And so, for example, if the host of shaitan begins to win, then my imagination and my thoughts will all be satanic. Yeah? It will take me down a path that will be away from Allah, telling me to do things, telling me to chase after things, telling me to want things and desire things and do it. What's the big deal? Because my imagination and my thought process is taking me down that path. But on the other hand, if the divine forces begin to win, then my thoughts begin to be holy. My thoughts begin to be beautiful. My thoughts begin to be wholesome. And that is the path that it will take, the seven functionalities that we talked about. This is all taking place within us every single moment. It's in a way fascinating, right? Because we don't focus on that. We don't realize what's taking place. We just look at our actions and our responses and our effects of these. But internally, there is literally a battle brewing. Yeah? And this is why, as I said, we have thoughts that one day will be like this, one day will be like that. And the more we listen to one particular host over the other, yeah, the more silent the other host will become. Right? You know, for a person who, let's say, for example, used to listen to music and then they stopped listening to music, for a little while there will be a thought that will say, just turn it on. Just listen to it. What's the big deal? But then if you are adamant and you stick to this, that I'm not going to do this thing, eventually that thought and that desire to listen to music will no longer come to you. It won't, right? Because you have abandoned that particular host and that particular idea. And so you will notice within our own lives, what am I desirous about? What am I constantly thinking about? And that is where I have to put my effort to fight this particular battle so that that particular host does not win. But this battle is taking place every single moment. And it will take place till the day we meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and leave this worldly existence, right? We have to be conscious of this. Because the moment, what it comes down to is that at every single breath, either the divine forces are winning or the satanic forces are winning. Every breath, right? And if I'm not fighting the satanic forces, I am with the divine forces. But if I am not with the divine forces, I'm not in the middle somewhere. I am with the satanic forces. And this is where we have to be conscious of this all the time. Today highlights the importance of what we're going to talk about. Because we need to learn to combat this and fight this so that we are on that path that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants. And inshallah, we will go through this journey together in hopes that we will become better together, inshallah, as a community so that we can be used to the imam of our time and be on the path towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Wa akhiru da'wan. And alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The
Statistics and studies show the number of cases of violence with firearms in the United States has increased in recent years, especially since 2020. As gun violence ramped up during the coronavirus pandemic in America, cities also saw homicide rates rise. And that trend continued in 2021 in many of the nation's most populous cities. The American people are the most armed citizens in the world, and this estimate from the 2021 National Firearms Survey shows that about two-thirds of American adults own a gun. In this regard, we have taken a close look at some of world press and news agencies to shed more light on this matter. Please stay with us. Over the weekend, at least 9 people were killed and 48 wounded in multiple shootings in different parts of the United States. The U.S. Gun Violence Archive says more than 30,000 people have died from gun violence in the United States so far this year. According to CGTN website, in Norfolk, Virginia, police say 2 people were killed and 5 others injured by gunfire at a party on Sunday, 4th of September. On the same day, at least 6 people were injured in a shooting incident in downtown Charleston, South Carolina. In Maryland, a 15-year-old teenage boy was killed and 3 other people injured after 2 gunmen opened fire on Saturday, 3rd of September, inside a convenience store. From Friday, 2nd of September, to Sunday, 4th of September, the city of Chicago in Illinois reported a number of shootings that left 6 people dead and 34 others injured. Last year was the deadliest for the city of Chicago in 25 years, with nearly 800 homicides recorded. News Times Daily explains more about the story, saying, "Gun and violence have become ubiquitous words. It is appalling. America is known from abroad to have a culture in which the procurement and ownership of guns lead to the pervasive killing of students, worshippers, and innocent bystanders, causing premature death in thousands of people. In the face of this prevalence, gun violence is declared a public health crisis, an epidemic of evil, with hand weapons being the instruments. Every tragic and sorrowful shooting prompts governmental action, followed by disagreements and inaction. Citizens are acting instead. Some activists want an office of gun prevention. Some communities are establishing community intervention programs, starting with young people who are on both ends of the gun, as drivers and victims of violence. U.S. Congress passed the first major gun safety legislation in years. However, even the National Rifle Association, the NRA, stated, it does little to address violent crime. Sure, access to fewer guns by fewer people means fewer deaths, but gun violence is not going away. With so many guns already in circulation, hundreds of gun laws written and not passed by Congress, and the pressure of the gun lobby make enforcement of the new act questionable about reducing gun incidents. If using hand weapons is of epidemic proportions, efforts to mitigate it are essential. It means getting to the root of why crimes are committed in the first place. Those committing shootings that have been determined to be impulsive and immature youths and adults with problem histories, all who found ease in purchasing guns. Warning signs were there: bullying and being bullied, depression, adverse childhood experiences, stress at home, and an interest in violence and hatred. If these markers are identified, individuals can be assessed and managed as early as possible, Researchers about gun violence prevention can use data to identify potential threatening people. The Minnesota Reformer writes, in a country where there are more firearms than people, mass shooting incidents have become increasingly frequent, and gun violence in general is on the rise. More Americans died from gun violence in 2020, the most recent year for which there is data, than any other year on record, and gun violence was the number one cause of death for children in 2020. In the past year, the country has grappled with an onslaught of mass shooting incidents, from a 15-year-old boy shooting and killing four students and wounding seven others at Oxford High School in southeast Michigan, a gunman killing seven people and wounding dozens more during a 4th of July celebration in Highland Park, Illinois, another gunman killing 19 children and two teachers in Uvalde, Texas, the deadliest mass shooting in 2022, and a gunman and avowed white supremacist shooting and killing 10 people at a supermarket in Buffalo, New York. Amidst this terror, experts are grappling with why this is happening. The answer is that it is layered. There's the fact that guns are ubiquitous in the United States. In a country of about 330 million people, gun owners possess about 393.3 million weapons, and gun ownership soared during the coronavirus pandemic. The current gun violence crisis comes at a time when gun ownership soared during the pandemic and the number of white nationalist groups jumped by 55% during the Donald Trump presidency. Experts say there are a lot of guns and a lot of anger, much of which is fueled by white supremacy that spreads like a wildfire because of social media in the country right now. Following the shooting incident at Oxford High School, U.S. Democratic lawmakers called on their Republican colleagues to act on legislation meant to curb gun violence, including Senate bills 550, 553, and House bills 5066 and 5069, which would require gun owners to store firearms that could be accessed by minors and children in a locked box or other secure location. Other bills, including bipartisan and bicameral legislation, Senate bills 678, 679, and House bills 5371 and 5372, would prohibit individuals convicted of domestic violence misdemeanor from owning a gun or ammunition until 8 years after they have paid any fines and completed their jail term or probation terms. None of these bills have received a hearing. CNN's website elaborates more on the issue, saying, gun violence is rampant in the United States, according to Gun Violence Archive. There have been at least 456 mass shooting incidents in 2022, leaving 30,237 people dead. That's an average of more than 1.8 mass shootings every day so far. The 2018 Small Arms Survey found that there were approximately 393 million firearms in civilian hands in the country, or 120.5 firearms per 100 people. That number is much higher now, given the soaring increase in gun sales in the past few years. U.S. President Joe Biden in July said that a flood of guns was turning American communities into killing fields and vowed to reinstate a ban on assault rifles. The remarks came in a White House ceremony to mark new gun control legislation that he signed on 25th of June. President Biden said, "This has taken too long, with too much of a trail of bloodshed and carnage." The past many years, across our schools, places of worship, workplaces, stores, music festivals, nightclubs, and so many other everyday places, they have turned into killing fields. A group of parents and family members who lost their loved ones in the Uvalde school shooting incident joined gun safety advocates outside the Texas governor's mansion in Austin, Texas, recently, pleading for Governor Greg Abbott to move to raise the minimum age to purchase an assault rifle, AR-15-style rifles. With schools across Texas having already welcomed students back into the classroom, gun safety advocates are calling for the governor to hold a special legislative session so state lawmakers can vote on whether to raise the minimum age for purchasing AR-15-style rifles from 18 to 21 years old. The Texas governor, Greg Abbott, has repeatedly said he would not do so. Abbott has claimed that mental health is at the core of America's gun violence epidemic, not firearms themselves. One of those parents say mental health is part of the problem, but that refusing to acknowledge that guns play a part as well is ridiculous.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Virtues of the Believers, Friday the 3rd of Ramadan, 1394, the 20th of September, 1974. Another example of anfal is mineral wealth, ma'adin, that is extracted from beneath the ground. Yet another example is the forests, the deserts, or the great pastures in valleys or on mountains. In short, anfal denotes any kind of wealth that does not belong to a single person or to a single group of people, but rather is public property, belonging to the nation as a collective. However, one of the aforementioned examples are those spoils won by soldiers in warfare. The first time this question seems to have been raised was after the Battle of Badr, when the Muslims were discussing how they should divide the spoils they had won. They disagreed with one another, so they referred the matter to the Prophet and asked him what they should do. Their answer came in the form of the aforementioned verse of the Quran. Say, the Anfal belong to Allah and the Apostle. What does it mean when the Quran says they belong to Allah? It means that they do not belong to any one particular group of people. Anything that belongs to Allah, anything that is said to be God's property, actually means something that should be used for godly aims.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Clearly, when we say that something belongs to God, we do not mean that it should be spent for God's benefit, because God does not benefit from wealth. God does not have any needs. God does not have any wants. So there is no need to spend His wealth to fulfill these. On the contrary, when we speak of God's property, we mean the property of all of His servants. Therefore, His wealth should be used for those causes alone which God has specified. This is the meaning of saying something belongs to Allah. And the Apostle, what does this mean? That it is the property of the Messenger. Yes, but what does that mean? Is the Prophet the polar opposite of God? Of course not. But when we say something belongs to Allah, someone might come along and give himself the right to do with it as he pleases, because it belongs to no one in particular. He can say, this belongs to Allah and we are all Allah's servants. So using this pleasant-sounding and attractive slogan, the person can use something that belongs to everyone for his own personal benefit. Therefore, while Allah's wealth is supposed to be used for the benefit of all the Muslims and all of God's true servants, using it for the public good does not mean it can be used haphazardly, as anyone pleases. On the contrary, there should be some management of this wealth. There should be someone in charge of it as God's representative, who will look after people's interests.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.